Right here in the Pikes Peak region, we ride alongside some incredible athletes. Coming up next on Paddle the Springs, we're talking with one of them, Paralympic hand cyclist Kate Brim. She's gone from local rides through Cheyenne Canyon and Garden of the Gods to the podium at the 2024 Paralympics in Paris, and her most recent wins at the Paracycling World Cup in Thailand. Her journey is about grit, resilience, and redefining what's possible.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
Welcome and roll on in to the Paddle the Springs podcast, where we banter about all things biking in Colorado Springs and the Pikes Peak region. I'm your host, Tori Giffen, owner of the Buffalo Lodge Bicycle Resort and self-appointed ambassador for cycling in the Springs. And what I don't know about cycling in this area, my friends do. And here is today's guest. Welcome, Kate Brim, Paralympic hand cyclist for Team USA. I am so honored to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here as well. Yeah, I couldn't express the gratitude for reaching out at Visit Colorado.
Well, I got to go to the Visit Colorado Springs annual business luncheon, and you were sharing your story up on that stage. And you know, we're Olympic City USA, and they wanted to hear from a true Olympian, you know, what makes this city great, and you know, why you love Colorado Springs, and hear your story. And you know, as you shared your story, I looked around the room and there was not a dry eye in the house. So powerful, just your journey and your inspiration. And, you know, you just came back from the worlds in Thailand, and you hit the trifecta. You won all three. So how does that feel? I mean, you're just coming off a huge win.
Yeah. So that was our first World Cup of the season. And it actually was my first race back since Paris. I have not been able to race since Paris, so well over a year and a half.
So Paris, you won also.
Yeah.
You won gold in Paris in the time trial
and
bronze in the team relay. Yes. Yeah, I've studied.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, so Thailand was my first race back since Paris. It was a very hard race coming back to, because I've just dealt with a lot of health challenges since Paris. It was probably a good 7 months where I wasn't able to ride, which was super hard, both physically and mentally. But we got me back to training slowly but surely, and it's been a painful, tedious process, and also just really hard, both physically and mentally, just trying to believe that I still have it in me and stuff with everything I've been through. But we went to Thailand, and it was a beautiful debut. It was the first ever World Cup or paracycling event to be held in Asia.
Wow.
That was the very first time, and they're hoping to do it again next year. And it was absolutely amazing, even despite everything that's going on right now. It was hosted beautifully, and we couldn't have asked for a better venue. It was very challenging, kept people on their toes, and it was truly incredible, and we had a great team that went.
These are no small challenges that you faced in not being able to ride for 7 months. And then I know that I got to see you before you went to Thailand at the Visit Colorado Springs luncheon, and you didn't know if these health challenges that you were dealing with were going to allow you to compete. So what have you been dealing with? And then we'll talk about the win. So what's been going on?
Yeah. So Paris, leading into Paris, I sustained a pretty serious kidney infection that ended up going and affecting me pretty systemically, mainly my GI tract. And so my whole GI tract is paralyzed and essentially immobilized. And so at first we tried tube feeds and that did not work. We did that for a good almost 6 months. And I tried going to World Championships last year, and I actually unfortunately ended up in the ICU with a pretty bad hypoglycemia event. I'm also type 1 diabetic, and we think that my body just had no glycogen stores whatsoever because my body wasn't absorbing any of the nutrients going in through my tube feeds. And so, yeah, I ended up in the ICU when I was in Belgium, and then they got me back here, and they're like, nope, you have to go on TPN, which is total perinatal nutrition, which is nutrition that goes into your venous system. And so it's very dangerous. It's hard on the body. It's very hard on your liver and your kidneys and all your organs. But it's also something that you have to be sterile with and very, very careful with. And so it's, you know, every day that I'm doing it, it's, you know, being as careful as I can be and stuff, and staying on top of symptom management and stuff. And it is what has allowed me to get back to the bike, which I'm very grateful for. But it was a road I never envisioned having to go down or wanting to go down. They had talked about it before Belgium. They were like, oh, you may need to consider this. But I was like, absolutely not. I want to make sure we've exhausted all options tube feeding wise. And then Belgium happened, and it was off the table. It was either that or...
I can only imagine when you train so much and then you're coming off the, you know, the Paris win, and like to be told that you're not going to make it to Belgium. How do you pull yourself out of that? Like what, like the brain of, you know, of a Paralympic athlete, just to keep fighting and going? Like, is it all you? I mean, you have some incredible teams and people behind you as well.
Yeah. For me, honestly, so I'm a huge proponent of, you know, the team behind the team. Cycling so often is seen as such an individual sport. When we view it on TV, you know, you see the big faces, and all they see is the big faces. But like, all those big faces have so many people behind them, getting them to the start line, getting them through those races, you know, between our soigneurs, our PTs, our physicians, our dietitians, strength and conditioning, our mental health help and stuff, all of it. Like, all of it is so needed in order for us to be as strong as we are. And that's really where I've had to lean, is, you know, the team that I have between Novo Nordisk and here at the USOPC. They're really the ones who have gotten me here and told me that, no, it is still possible. And, you know, just takes a little bit of patience and a little bit of extra work, and we can do it. And we showcased that beautifully in Thailand. I was very nervous. I was very stressed because I had never traveled with TPN. And TPN, it has to be refrigerated. And so I had to travel with it all on dry ice. And that was a whole process in itself. Initially, I had an all-in-one suitcase, and it was 95 pounds. And I was like, oh, that is not going to fly at all. Yeah. And that was when I realized, oh, my goodness, this is what it takes in order for me to live, is 95 pounds worth of supplies. Like, I went to Thailand with 2 day outfits and 2 cycling outfits, and was planning to do laundry, and the rest was all my medical stuff, which was so eye-opening to me. And, you know, I like documented it mentally, but I wish I would have documented it like physically as well, because it was just truly eye-opening to me that the work that I'm putting in every day to be able to perform is just huge.
You know, if you're not watching the Paralympics and Paralympic athletes, the journey for a Paralympic athlete, I mean, to be an Olympian is incredible, but what you and others in your field have to battle to be at the top of your game and to be able to compete is just unbelievable. I mean, you know, how that's not even more viewed than the regular Olympics is beyond me. I mean, it's just truly inspiring. I mean, you want inspiration. It's right here. Like, literally, you're carrying 95 pounds of medicine to keep you alive so that you can compete at the Olympic level. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's what I love about the Olympics and the Paralympics, is it's so unique from, you know, NFL and NHL and NBA and stuff, because every single athlete, both on the Olympic and Paralympic side, are working their butts off in order to be able to do the sports that they love. We don't get near the funding that, you know, the big show sports in America get. And so many of us are working jobs on the sides and working super, super hard to try and find sponsors and stuff. But the stories behind both Olympic and Paralympic athletes are just truly remarkable. And so it's, yeah, every year it's amazing. Every game's seeing that us getting more and more spectatorship has been truly incredible.
I think people like you can change that. Yes.
Yeah.
People like you can change that. But, you know, I've had my own challenges with continuing in sport and for my family and, you know, battling brain cancer in our family and things like that. And, you know, everybody deals with something or will deal with something in their lives. I mean, disability is something that can affect anybody. You just never know when. And we need people like you who inspire us and tell us that we can get past whatever we're dealing with. It doesn't mean that, you know, what we're dealing with isn't difficult or challenging. But when you can see other people that are battling and competing at the highest level of sport and that it is far from easy. It's extraordinary what you've been able to achieve. I mean, you went to Thailand and you got the trifecta and won all three competitions that you compete in. Tell me where you're at on social or how we can follow
you. Yeah. So my Instagram is pretty easy. It's literally Quad Kate. And then Facebook is Kate Brim. And those are the two main areas that I'm on.
Can we friend you on Strava?
Yeah, I'm on Strava too. Yep. Kate Brim on there as well. And yeah, I love riding around here in the Springs whenever I'm able to. It's my first year out here. I think there was maybe two or three days where I had to ride indoors because of weather. Otherwise, I was out on the road no matter the temperature because I came from Michigan and the roads here, you know, the snow melts the same day and stuff, which is
amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you're riding
amazing
along the snow. And yeah. It's beautiful. Yep. So where do you love to ride in the Springs?
So typically my go-tos are Gold Camp Road, Cheyenne Canyon occasionally, Garden of the Gods, and then I'll go down into Fountain as well. You know, Colorado Springs, it kind of has its few little go-to spots as far as riding. It's a little bit challenging at times for sure, especially in the city. I'm living at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center, and getting to a lot of the routes can be a little bit challenging. But yeah, those are my main go-tos.
Yeah, we need some better trails over on that side of town, I think. We usually just go up like Cacharis or Costilla. Oh, because you can go up Costilla right up to the Olympic and Paralympic Museum from over there. Yeah, I think that's from Memorial Park, kind of right nearby the Olympic Training Center. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So when do you ride for fun or are you always going fast?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's interesting.
Do you get to enjoy the view on Cheyenne Mountain?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's the thing I always tell people is like, you know, I preferably like to ride outside as much as I do just because of the absolutely amazing scenery that we have here between Garden of the Gods and Gold Camp. And, you know, you're either looking at Pikes Peak, Garden of the Gods, or over the entire city. Mm-hmm. And it's just truly amazing. You know, I can get good interval sessions in on Gold Camp and be treated with looking over the city and the Red Canyon rocks and stuff is truly incredible. And yeah, me personally, I'm able to execute it all, go for an easy ride, still be able to stick wherever I want and also get some interval work done as well. It's truly incredible.
And then I would imagine that our high altitude really gives you a nice advantage when you're traveling to compete. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm one of the weird ones. I don't really notice much as far as coming and going to altitude, even when I first moved out here.
It doesn't change your time?
Yeah, okay. It doesn't. Really has not affected me a lot. It's been interesting, but I have other teammates who it affects them heavily when they first come to altitude. But once they do, they go to sea level, they're like, oh, yeah, I get like a 5-10 watt boost sometimes. And I'm like, Man, I wish.
I feel like I have superpowers when I go to low altitude.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So so where do you train indoors? Do they have like a whole indoor cycling facility at the...
So at the training center, we've got a team room. Yeah, and we all utilize the smart trainers. So I'm on a adapted Wahoo kicker that is essentially flipped upside down and put on this hanger system that allows me to connect my hand cycle directly to it. And it's nice because I'm able to use Zwift and mimic elevation still, which has been cool. But also within the last year or so, I've been utilizing old school rollers. I've found for hand cycles, it really cleans up the pedal stroke, and really teaches you just proper biking mechanics. And so I've been leaning on the rollers a lot more recently, which has been interesting because when I first was introduced to rollers, I was like, I hate these.
Yes, me too.
These are the bane of my existence. And then, yeah, when I first started, really all I was allowed to do was really low end zone two. And so I was like, okay, well, this is the perfect time to start learning. And so that's exactly what I did. And now I'm doing interval work on them and long zone two rides on them and stuff. And it's really reflected on the road.
So you are a complete bike geek, world-class athlete, Olympic athlete. How long have you been biking? Because, this wasn't always your sport.
Yeah.
What was your sport?
Yep. So I sustained a spinal cord injury in 2017. And before that, I was a able-bodied rower and enjoyed it quite a bit.
What level were you rowing at?
I was rowing at the high school level. Okay. I was thinking about going to the college level, but just hadn't really figured out what I wanted to do with college yet. And so, you know, I was injured when I was 19. And so I was pretty much just getting started with college, but I thought I had my career set. I was at Ferris State University at the time going for construction management. I was like, cool. Life's hardest job is complete. I have figured out what I want to do. I was doing directional drilling for a local fiber optic company at the time as well. And then my injury happened, which was because of a routine back surgery for a herniated disc. It was supposed to be outpatient. And then, yeah, my life completely changed. And I was left with a spinal cord injury and needing to completely change my career just because the path that I wanted to go down with construction management was just not going to be doable in a wheelchair. And so, you know, it took a lot of rediscovering myself, and it was really hard because I was 19 at the time and pretty naive. But, you know, thankfully I was sent to an amazing rehabilitation hospital in Michigan, Mary Freebed Rehabilitation Hospital. And their whole main goal is, no matter the disability or the diagnosis or whatever, whoever is coming into there, their whole goal is to getting people back to doing what they love, whether that be through community, whether that be through church, whether that be through sport, you name it, they're going to get you back to it one way or another. And for me, that ended up being adaptive sport. They introduced me to wheelchair rugby and hand cycling, and I fell in love with hand cycling in particular. Just because of the freedom it brought me, you know, it got me out of a wheelchair and on the road, and feeling the wind behind my, through my hair and stuff was just absolutely amazing. And so I did it very recreationally when I started out, just on my own. And then I started joining the Mary Freebed group rides, and starting to meet a few other hand cyclists, which was super cool. And I was also doing wheelchair rugby at the time, and, you know, adaptive sport, it was the opening doors for me to as far as showing me what I truly am capable of, because when I was in the rehab hospital, the labels that they gave me were not pretty. You know, they told me I was going to need a caregiver 24/7, and, you know, I was like, heck no, I'm 19 years old. This can't be the case. And so thankfully the adaptive sports community, you know, got me stepping outside of my comfort zone left and right the first several years of my injury, which was huge. And yeah, so got really into hand cycling and did my first race in 2021. And that was where I was like, holy cow, where has this been all along? Why did I wait so long and say no so many times to, you know, a couple of my teammates? And so, yeah, I did my first race in 2021. And then
how'd you do?
So it was my very first race was the Riverbank Run, and it was solely it was a running race that had a hand cycling category in it. And I just remember being like absolutely ecstatic in the racing atmosphere again. I loved it in rowing, and being in the racing atmosphere was absolutely amazing. And then I did my first paracycling specific race, which was Chattanooga, Tennessee. And that was where I had just hired a coach at the time. He had been my coach for maybe a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And so he had treated Chattanooga as the essentially my power profile test. And he just said, go out and ride as hard as you can. You're going to get a little bit of everything with this course, some climbing, some descending, some technicality. And so we did that. And I ended up ranking number one on the ranking list there, which qualified me for my very first World Cup and the World Championships. And that was where I got my first international gold medals, which
was that at?
Baie-Comeau, Canada, and Quebec. Yeah.
Wow.
Which was absolutely huge. And, you know, that was where my cycling career ended up taking off very quickly. You know, I am definitely the oddball out when it comes to cycling. You know, a lot of cyclists have to work very, very hard in order to be able to qualify within their categories and stuff. And so, you know, for me to be able to pull off what I did was truly amazing. And, you know, I think a lot of it just comes from, you know, my true grit and determination and just not letting things define me has been a huge part of it. And like I stated earlier, you know, the team behind the team getting me there and stuff and just always believing in me.
How'd you get all your equipment? Are there programs that help people get
their bikes?
I mean, that's expensive stuff,
right? It's very expensive. So my bike that I'm on now, race ready, is about $25,000. Wow. Which is very expensive, and they are not a bike that you can just go into a bike shop and buy. You have to have them ordered directly from the manufacturer, and it takes several months. Thankfully, as the years have gone on, there are more and more grant opportunities coming available for adaptive athletes to get equipment and to start getting into sport, which is amazing to see. When I first started into adaptive sport is really, I feel like, when it started taking off and becoming bigger. And every year since then, it's just gotten bigger and bigger, which has been amazing to see. Because I think that's one of the hardest thing about the Paralympics is just the sheer cost of equipment across all disciplines is huge, between prosthetics, orthotics, you know, bikes, all the equipment that it takes for the athletes to be able to perform this in the sports that they do. It's not your typical equipment that you go mm-hmm. to a sports warehouse and buy. It's all very specialized to our disabilities. And so it's very expensive, and it adds up very, 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 very quickly, which is huge.
I would love to see it flip, the sponsorships flip to start putting the big money, you know, in your sport. That would just be amazing to have more people step up to really help make some truly extraordinary feats happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. So what does the sport need from the community?
You know, us and cycling, I think the biggest thing is just visibility, especially in the U.S., both able-bodied and in the Paralympic side. It's very minimal. Racing is not a very publicized, huge thing. And so paracycling is slowly every year, I feel like, growing a little bit more and more. And we actually just recently merged with USA Cycling. Originally, we were under the USOPC, and just this past year, we merged with USA Cycling, and they're doing some pretty heavy work to get more visibility on paracycling, and both paracycling and the able-bodied side, and trying to create more racing opportunities across all the disciplines, which has been really cool to see. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is just the visibility aspect of it. It's very challenging for cycling. You know, you see Tour de France and stuff, and that's really the big tours are what you see, but you know, a lot of the smaller racing is struggles for spectatorship, but it's growing every year, which is amazing to see. And I think we just got to keep that pressure.
You also said visibility of cyclists on the road, that it gets pretty scary out there when, you know, you're out there riding and training. What are, you know, just motorists, like, what do people need to be aware of when they're out there?
Yeah, especially us hand cycles. So a lot of us hand cyclists that are riding on the road, you know, a lot of people in cars, they look at our bikes and they're like, oh, get on the sidewalk, or oh, you shouldn't be on the road, because our bikes are wider. Mm-hmm. You know, we have two wheels in the back that sit probably, in some cases, anywhere from 2.5 feet at the widest, I would guess. Mine's probably right around 2 feet wide. And so, yeah, we do take up extra room on the road, and we are also very low to the ground. And so it's hard to see us. Recently here at the training center, we've emphasized some heavier visibility requirements as far as our flags systems go. So mm-hmm. I have a big draft bar in the back that's highlighter yellow, and then a flag and lights that I put on as mm-hmm. well. But just being aware of, like, you know, respect the 3 feet rule. That's especially here in Colorado, respect the 3 feet rule. Understand that, you know, we're not trying to get in the way of you, and we don't want you getting in the way of us either. And we're watching out for you, and you guys need to watch out for us as well. And so, yeah, I think a lot of it just comes down to distracted driving is a huge issue. But also, you know, for us hand cyclists, making ourselves visible.
Because most of the time it's just you out there. You're a pretty common sight riding up to Gold Camp Road and things like that, where, you know, it's, there's not a whole big team around you when you're just doing your regular training, yeah. right? It's just
yep.
you and the road.
It's just me. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the difficult parts about hand cycling is, even if we do have a big group of hand cyclists, we all have such different ability levels that mm-hmm. it's hard to stay together unless we all say, mm-hmm. okay, yep, we're all going to only do 50 watts. But, you know, that's great for your group rides. But the majority of us who are out mm-hmm. here in Colorado Springs at the training center are out here training for our events between triathlon and cycling and all of the sports that are held at the USOPC, we're here to train and train hard. Mm-hmm. And so especially for cyclists, you know, that's one of the really difficult things is getting people to understand that, you know, we're utilizing the roads to train and it's hard and it's scary.
This is Olympic City, USA.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And we're proud of it. Can I ask you, how long does it take you to get out to actually
to get to Gold Camp from
just getting ready to go out on a bike ride?
Oh,
what does
yeah
that, you know, because I know that some days, you know, I might struggle to get up and just get motivated to get on my bike and go ride, but I throw on my clothes and, you know, brush my teeth, and I can put on my helmet, my gloves, and ride my bike right outside my room. What does it take for you to get out there?
Yeah, for me, it's a little bit different. So my total perinatal nutrition is run overnight, over 14 hours. And so I run that overnight. And then when I wake up in the morning, I have to check my blood sugar. And I have Dexcom on as well, which is a continuous glucose monitor. And so I'm looking at that and how my blood sugars have trended, how are my symptoms and stuff, and managing that, what can I take in orally and stuff. So for me, it's doing my TPN overnight, having to disconnect from that, and making sure that, you know, my line is all kept off sterilely and stuff. And then getting myself ready for the bike, which is making sure my blood sugar is in check and headed in the right direction, not going too high, but also not going too low. Getting myself on the bike is also a little bit of a hassle. You know, having to transfer into the bike and stuff is not the easiest. And us hand cyclists, like I said, we're laying down. And so we have to get down in the hand bike, get our legs up into the footrest and stuff. And so for me, it's To get ready for a bike ride, I would say on a slow day, probably 45 minutes to an hour. If I'm rushing, I can probably do it in about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Which is long. It's not, oh, let me just go quickly go put on a helmet and clip
and you live
in
independently. And, yeah. You are yep. independent.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yep.
So what would you like other people to know about, like your inspiration? Like what do you hear the most when, you know, people are talking to you, like, and what means the most to you that you're able to give back?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a quote that I have lived by since my injury, and it's by Walter Anderson. And it's as follows: bad things do happen. How I respond to them defines my character and the quality of my life. I can choose to sit in perpetual sadness, immobilized by the gravity of my loss, or I can choose to rise from the pain and treasure the most precious gift I have, life itself. And I've lived by that from the day of my injury, and it is what's gotten me through all of the challenges that I have faced since my injury. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things, you know, we're allowed to have the bad days, and it's important to not push those bad days and those bad feelings and those emotions to the side and just shove them under. They're valid and they're there for a reason. But, you know, we've got to be able to hang on to those struggles and stuff and, you know, use them in a way as our crutch to help us get through those hard times and just remember that. You know, life, there's so much in life as far as what is truly available and stuff. And I always feel like the sky's the limit and, you know, the sky's endless, which is what I try to live by every single day, especially this past year and a half for me.
Because it's become even more fragile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Become even more like, yeah, you're constantly being told that this is a tough battle for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yep.
But you keep going and you just won. And what's next?
Yeah. So next is our World Cup in Italy, which I'm really looking forward to.
September?
No, it's actually beginning of May is our World Cup.
Okay.
Which will be the last event to qualify for the World Championships, which is our first World Championships ever to be held here in the U.S. In Huntsville, Alabama. And that's happening September 4th through the 9th, which I'm really looking forward to. Having a World Championships here on home soil is going to be truly incredible. And I can't wait to see everything that they have in store for it. It's going to be amazing.
And your only biking before all of this was just a little commuter huffy, you said?
Yeah, yep. You know,
if you can do it, I mean, like, that is just such huge inspiration.
Yeah, yep. I, like I said, I was a rower, able-bodied, and I, outside of rowing, I was always outdoors. I loved being outdoors. I was out with my dogs pretty much from sun up until sundown. Oliver and I, I was really big into longboarding, and he actually rode my longboard with me. And so we would just be going up and down the streets by my house and stuff, just living it up together. He was an amazing little pal. But yeah, you know, I've always had the endurance side in me from rowing and just, you know, being out there with my dog on the longboard and my bike and stuff. And so, yeah, I knew sports was something I wanted to get involved with.
Is this a full-time thing now, or do you have to have side jobs now, or do you still work in your field, or?
Yeah, so I originally, right after my injury, was working at Amazon. I ended up quitting there. I wouldn't say quitting, but just moving on from there to be able to move out here to the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center, mm-hmm. where cycling is pretty much my full-time job now. And I'm very fortunate with the residency program that we have out here that it allows me to be able to do that. You know, I'm doing a lot of speaking events and a lot of advocacy work on the side and stuff, which is huge for me. But, you know, me being out here in Olympic City, USA at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center is the sole reason why I am as successful as I am. And it wouldn't be possible without all the amazing team that I have here. So
So cycling, we have coming up in May. And then you're going on to Huntsville and the world's there. Personally, what's next for you, or what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, so actually, I just got done doing a little bit of a move to another suite, and then actually my service dog comes this coming Tuesday, which is very exciting. He's been in training for the last year and a half to become my diabetic alert dog. It was a huge commitment for me to make, but it was just something that I felt like it was a tool that I really, really could benefit from, because I actually do not feel my low blood sugars or my high blood sugars, which is super, super scary. I've been close to single digits as far as low blood sugars and still fully conscious, which is super, super dangerous. And so, you know, it's scared me, especially because I do live alone, especially overnight. It's left me with a lot of fear and stuff. And having him is going to be huge. And
when does he come?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah. Yay!
Yep. They fly in Monday, and Tuesday he will be at the training center, which is super exciting. Yeah.
I want a picture to share on this podcast for our video version. So send that to us. And then thank you so much, Kate, for being here today.
It's a pleasure
getting to know more about you. I mean, what a great podcast. I'm so excited. And we look forward to seeing more of your adventures and talking to more of your friends. More of your friends, we'd love to hear their stories too, because every journey is unique. But
for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Pedal the Springs podcast on Studio 809. Pedal the Springs is brought to you by the Buffalo Lodge Bicycle Resort, the only bicycle-themed lodging and must-stay for cyclists coming to Colorado. Check us out at bicycleresort.com for more information. Also, be sure to check out the show notes for links we mentioned in this episode, and hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out the other fine podcasts at Studio809podcast.com, your local voices in the Pikes Peak region. Pedal the Springs podcast is produced by Studio 809 and recorded at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.